that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army.
Come through a destination for the next up to me. Okay, we'll see what's currently in your way, okay?
There's two of them, and they
stayed
the exact same spot, 05,
but I'm sorry,
like, say that.
Oh, my God, I hope that's a plane. Oh, Jesus, please be a plane. Oh, please. Come on, Lisa, are you ready for this?
My cameraman said, what the hell is that midway across the Hudson River? It was a perfectly circular hit.
For the first time in our history, we're studying something that's studying us.
Nobody told me that these days like this.
Suddenly, something else flew into the frame. Fired a beam of light that struck the dummy warhead, doing a circle, if you can imagine, circling our warhead. Fired another beam of light at it, which struck the warhead.
The Virtually Strange Network presents Strange Days Indeed, your premier source for UFO information, with your host, Errol Bruce Knapp.
Hello, and welcome to edition 436 of Strange Days Indeed, the program that observes and reports on the phenomena that surround one of the greatest mysteries that humanity has ever faced. UFOs, unidentified flying objects. This week, the 3rd in April 2007, weekly editorial contributor Dave Furlott, a British correspondent and publisher of UFO Review Stuart Miller, UFO magazine contributor and abductee Jeremy Vaney, and to close out this week's program, John Velez. These are Strange Days Indeed. As I keep saying, your feedback to this program is important and useful, and also of great interest to me. So plonk yourself down at your keyboard and let me know what you think. Just as Jeff Hahn did. He keyed, Errol, I just wanted to take you up on your request for suggestions on the podcast in your latest production. First, I want to say that I'm very much enjoying the new formats. Me too. He says, I love the longer shows relative to the old podcast and indeed the radio program. I love your having the freedom to extend segments where necessary, and I love the transition music. And he loves hearing more of Errol Bruce Knapp's own opinions. Well, I guess I'm letting them out slowly. You know, it's the cat in the bag syndrome. And Jeff goes on to address some interesting distribution possibilities, which, Jeff, I'm looking into. And thanks for your email, Jeff. The address, as always, is sdi@virtuallystrange.net.
These are Strange Days Indeed on UFO News Radio. Here with his take on it is Dave Furlott.
There's a thread on the UFO updates list called Ancient Piri-Riez Maps and UFOs. And it sparked some interesting posts, mostly about the map itself, but others touched on different aspects of ancient mysteries and UFOs. My own love of history and ufology makes this thread near and dear to my heart. Now, for those unfamiliar with the Piri-Riez maps, I shall try and simplify it. The Piri-Riez map is a map drawn on the skin of a gazelle by a Turkish admiral back in 1513 based on texts he consulted in the Library of Constantinople. What is most amazing about the map is the detail of the northern coast of Antarctica, a continent that was not to be discovered for another 300 years before he drew it, and it shows Antarctica without ice. Geological evidence confirms that the latest date Queen Maud Land, or Antarctica, could have been charted in an ice-free state is 4000 BC, and the only way to get a relatively accurate map of the region would be from the air. It becomes one of the true ancient mysteries and always sparks debate, with at least one or two people quickly pointing out that only an extraterrestrial influence can account for some of these mysteries. If we look throughout some of the ancient mysteries we have discovered, or believe we have discovered, it would appear that the extraterrestrials influencing our past theory is valid. For example, How is it possible that the ancient Mayan calendar is more accurate and shows more understanding of the movements of the planets around the sun and discovery of planets centuries before we could even see them? How is it possible that the Mayan doctors could perform intricate brain surgery? And most importantly, why did the ancient Mayan civilization simply up and disappear? The more we discover about ancient civilizations, it would seem, the less we truly know. It was believed that Roman soldiers wore leather armor, and this belief was not refuted until archaeological evidence proved it to be false. That evidence was not unearthed until the 1970s. Our entire understanding of ancient history is based on belief more than on evidence, because we simply do not have enough archaeological evidence or any written accounts of many of the ancient civilizations. And that includes some of the largest civilizations we know about: Egypt, Assyria, Persia, Mayans, Aztecs. Even the great European civilizations like Rome and Greece are still misunderstood over 2,000 years later. Up until recently, the great Hittite Empire that was greater than Egypt was almost believed to have been a myth. We have only theories about how Egypt built the pyramids. We have only theories about who built the Sphinx and when. The statues on Easter Island are one of the great mysteries, because it would have meant that the entire population of the island spent all their time making and placing the statues, with no time left over to deal with some of the more mundane things like eating or finding shelter from the elements. And I have only touched on a couple of the ancient mysteries that surround us. There are stories throughout all the ancient civilizations of being visited by beings from the stars. Star people, sky people, airwalkers. It doesn't matter which civilization you choose, you will find something that points to people coming down from the stars or the heavens, and most of them do not refer to these visitors as gods. It has been said by many ufologists that we need to forget about studying the big historical UFO cases like Roswell and concentrate instead on the reports of new UFO sightings. I say that if we concentrate on trying to solve some of the ancient mysteries, that perhaps we may find evidence there could be the link to understanding of the mystery of UFOs that surrounds us. But that's just my take on it.
Dave Furlong, every week at this time. Strange days, indeed.
Well, there's an instance of you and I both being very firmly in the same boat. Or Vimana, or flying ship.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Exactly.
It's a fascinating series of mysteries that seem to be surfacing. And when you look at the theories on dinosaurs that mm-hmm. are being blown out of the water, and the theories that have been put forth over the years about the universe, and we now notice how the universe is changing according to science, then we are left with the inevitable conclusion that we don't know nothing.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those situations where we get nailed with all of these things that are supposedly facts, and then 50 years, 100 years later, pow, blown right out of the water.
Mm-hmm.
Right out of the water.
Yes.
Like I said, even the great civilizations, Rome, we supposedly know everything about Rome. Well, guess what, folks? No, we don't. Okay? So how can we expect to look at a civilization that was 2,000 or 3,000 years before Rome and say, yeah, well, we know everything about that place?
Yeah.
<You know? laughs> And we look at some of the stuff that they've done that we cannot do today. And it's just mind-blowing.
Yes.
You know, it's like, okay, fine, guys, go ahead. Let's build a pyramid. How long do you think it's going to take right now with what we have? Oh, yeah, we might get it done in about 40 or 50 years.
Then... We have to invent the technology to be able to do it with the accuracy that those guys did back whenever it was that they built them.
Exactly. It's not necessarily to say that extraterrestrials came down and said, okay, let's help the Egyptians build some pyramids. No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is perhaps there's a civilization that we don't know anything about that was quite advanced, and that for some reason they either left or they got wiped out or God only knows what.
Or they are still among us, and we are they.
Yes, that's true, too.
Look at the way that humans appeared on this planet. Well, we don't know how they appeared on the planet. Some say that we evolved, and others say that this planet was seeded.
Mm-hmm. Those theories have their validity if you look at them. And again, I stress the term theories, because all of our historical records are just that, theories. There's nothing that has been proven beyond a shadow of a doubt.
Yes. I'm sure that buried in the ancient mysteries is the answer to what it is that we're looking for. And unfortunately, in the same case as Roswell, there is not enough evidence.
Exactly. The evidence is what is missing. When the guys dug up Newstead and came up with what has been termed the Newstead armor for the Romans, and they said, okay, here you go. This is what they were wearing. Well, that's kind of not leather, guys.
Undeniably Roman armor. Yes, absolutely.
They always turn around and go, yeah, this is the piece. And you look at it and you go, yeah, well, it could be. Let's wait a few years and let's have somebody else go, no.
Yes. No, yes. No, yes.
It's like Mars. Mars is one of my favorites. We have these facts that we knew about Mars. It couldn't, you can't, there's no water there, there's no way it could have any kind of an atmosphere, yada, 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 yada. Oh, well, we might have been wrong.
Yes, well, go ahead, leave us with a cliffhanger, Dave Furlot.
What can I tell you?
Say goodbye, Dave.
Okay. Talk to you next week.
Okay, thank you, sir. Yet again, a good take.
Thank you.
Once a month, we head across the Atlantic to the United Kingdom. In England, there's our British correspondent, Stuart Miller, joins us every month, and right now is no exception. Joining us on the line from his home in Cheshire in the United Kingdom is our British correspondent and publisher of UFO Review, Stuart Miller. Good day, sir.
And a very good day to you and to everybody listening.
How goes it over there?
Mild, pleasant, ufologically middling. Last time I think it was dull, this time it's just stepped up ever so slightly. We had a sighting of a UFO, or was it a satellite, or was it a UFO, or was it a satellite in Barrow yesterday?
Barrow in Furness, yes.
Indeed. A really bizarrely located place. I don't know if you know the map of the UK, but it's always been my desire to go and visit it for no reason, because there's nothing there at all.
Mm.
It's just in a rather silly place. I suspect, actually, knowing, bearing in mind its location, which is sort of bordering on the Irish Sea, and it's not that far from Scotland, and I suspect it might be sort of on the edge of one of the fly-through zones, testing grounds for various paraphernalia.
Ah, yes. Paraphernalia mostly from this side of the pond, huh?
Yes, or even some of our own stuff. You know, the Solway Firth, that area is, I think the military have zones up or around there. I could be wrong, it could be something of more interest than that, but it certainly brightened up that guy's Chinese takeaway meal.
Yeah, I love the headline, while eating Chinese. Well, how many Chinese were they eating?
Exactly. That's what they do in Barrow anyway, they eat Chinese.
Oh my.
It's funny how one thing leads on to another, because our two favourite sceptics, Dave Clark and Andy Roberts, have just had a book published. The book's called Flying Sorcerers, A Social History of Ufology by Clark and Roberts. And it is actually Flying Sorcerers, not Saucers. Published by Alternative Albion, it is indeed exactly what the title says. It's a look at the social sociological side or aspect of ufology, in the UK that is, that's important that I make that designation because it's not universal ufology, just British ufology. From 1948 to 1979, the reason I make that definition and specify that it is British as opposed to universal is because British ufology is unique in one aspect in that it is totally and completely filled with nutcases. Whereas I think across the board, internationally, there are plenty of nutcases about, but also more level-headed people as well.
Yes.
But
yes.
In Britain, you get a level of eccentricity that is unmatched in most other places. And that's really the beauty of the subject, the attraction of the subject. Whether ET exists or not isn't the focus of the book. Cases aren't the focus of the book, except where they come up in relation to a specific individual. People are the focus of the book, and it's about how ufology came over here, which is probably about 3 years after it started in the States, or it's sort of about 1950 it came over here substantially, and who the main characters were, and the sort of people, and so on and so forth. If you're into that side of it, if you like ufology for the cultural impact it's had on, well, certainly on British society, then this is a book for you. It's published by Alternative Albion. There is a website, publisher's website, and I'll repeat the title again, Flying Sorcerers, The Social History of Ufology. Now, I was hesitating a moment ago when I said that UK ufology sort of took off in 1950. I think I might have said 1950-ish. I was talking to Dave Clark about this, and during the course of the conversation, he reminded me of something, which isn't new, but when you know of something and then you forget about it, and you're reminded about it, it can make quite an impact on you. And I was absolutely gobsmacked, as we say over here, when I was reminded about this. And it is that in 1948, a British gentleman by the name of Bernard Newman, who went on to become a very prolific author, wrote a book called The Flying Saucer. And bizarrely, considering that ufology hadn't got over here yet, it is considered to be one of the very first books on the subject in the modern time.
Mm.
And the fact it was written by a Brit. Is it a book you've heard of, Errol?
No, I haven't. No, not even when I was young and interested in going to the library looking for books on flying saucers in the UK.
Well, then you are in for a shock in a few seconds, because the book was meant to be fiction, and it tells the story about, bear in mind the year, 1948, about a number of UFO crashes throughout the world, including one in New Mexico. It goes on to describe a faked alien autopsy and a plan to create a faked alien threat to try and unite the world.
Really?
As well as hoaxed alien crashes designed to add weight to the threat synopsis. Or hypothesis, rather.
My God!
Oh, and stories of hieroglyph-type markings on the wreckage of crashed UFOs. I kid you not. And this was fictional.
My God. Now, this man was either very prescient, or...
No, the situation is even more prosaic and in some ways distressing. He was a member of British intelligence.
Ah. Oh, my goodness.
Yes, it really does pose an awful lot of questions. Dave Clark has an original copy of the book that Newman had given to Captain Basil Liddell Hart, who at the time was head of UK military intelligence, and written in Newman's own hand on the flyleaf were the words, "You may find this amusing. Bernard Newman, 28th of the 10th, 1948.
Good grief.
I know. It is... It beggars belief, actually.
Yes, it does. It's almost a smoking gun, isn't it?
Well, it is, actually. You're right. It is. And the book exists. Copies still exist. You can get a copy and read it yourself. One of the UFO crashes, so this is slightly comical, that occurred internationally was meant to have occurred in Leicester. Well, that's in the UK now, to the best of my knowledge. Nothing's ever landed in Leicester.
In where?
The UFO coming down in Leicester is rather amusing.
Oh, in Leicester. Yes, yeah.
Leicester.
And that's not a known ufological center.
No.
In modern times.
Nothing untoward has ever happened in Leicester. But the rest of it is just bizarre.
That's very strange, Stuart. Good Lord.
I know.
The implications are quite staggering as far as the cover-up is concerned. And intelligence agencies and the attitude of especially North American intelligence agencies toward UFOs.
You're absolutely right, and it just poses so many questions. Because to start with, why would a British intelligence officer need to be involved in this? I just come to a complete, you know, my brain tries to sort of get a grip on this and to sort of try and work out, I suppose, what this might do is just bring back into focus as more likely the possibility that indeed there was an alien event at Roswell. That's what it does for me, because the last few years my mind has very much been in the Nick Redfern camp. I was absolutely convinced that Nick had got it spot on about what happened at Roswell, that it wasn't Mogul, that it was to do with balloons and flying wings and experiments on live human beings.
The book was published, you said, in 1948.
Correct.
So, in my mind, it takes a while to write a book.
It does, though I believe, according to Dave Clark, this man was very prolific later on. I mean, he would be turning out something like 4 books a year.
So it would be possible in the timeline of things for the event to occur in Roswell and the American and British intelligence people to get together, and the British suggesting that they had a man who was an author who would maybe be interested in writing a book that supposedly was fiction in order to cover up whatever events might have happened in Roswell and future events. That's what comes to my mind.
I think we've forgotten something here. We've forgotten the news broadcast, haven't we?
Yes, we have.
The